During the final sitting days of federal parliament last month, we witnessed a feverish attack by Prime Minister Scott Morrison on Labor Party leader Anthony Albanese in what's been described by ASIO boss Mike Burgess as the weaponisation of national security. Mr. Morrison and Defence Minister Peter Dutton unleashed an unprecedented tirade on Albanese, suggesting China had chosen the Labor leader as their preferred candidate. Indeed, that members of the opposition front bench are Manchurian candidates. So to discuss the merits of a Manchurian candidate and the role of the media in all this, and maybe a bit more, I'm joined by media and journalism guru Dr. Dennis Muller from the University of Melbourne's Centre for Advancing Journalism. Dennis argues in a recent Conversation article that Morrison and Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation are attempting to do to Australia's democracy what Murdoch and Donald Trump did to America between 2016 and 2021. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Alan.
So firstly, what is a Manchurian candidate? Can you give us a basic concept of what that is?
Yes, it comes from a novel written by a man called Condon in the early 1960s. So we're talking about a Cold War time, and we're talking about a time when America was feverishly concerned about the spread of communism. And the idea of the concept of the Manchurian candidate was that an ordinary American citizen would act as a kind of sleeper agent for the Chinese, who, of course, were a communist country, and that he wouldn't actually spy in the conventional sense, but he would be what was called a sleeper agent. So he would live an ordinary life in the United States, but he would be doing what he could to spread propaganda and information and ideas that tended to undermine democracy and promote the idea of communism. So that was the Manchurian candidate's basic role. He was a foreign agent. He was an agent for a foreign power, quietly and subtly trying to undermine people's belief in the legitimacy of their own government. So it's an extremely serious accusation to make. It's akin to calling someone a traitor.
Yeah, it's probably at the height of McCarthyism too in the United States. This movie would have come out, in the book.
Well, a bit later than that. McCarthyism was in the mid-50s, but this book came out in 1962 from my recollection. But the concern about communism was still very lively in America, still is to this very day, in fact. Mm. But certainly in the 1960s, and we're talking 1962, that is the period of the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, it really was a very feverish time, time of great anxiety in the Western world about what the communist powers, particularly Russia at that time, might do. But so it was a book of its time. But to drag out a reference to it now and to make the leader of the opposition and his deputy look like traitors was a really appalling thing for the Prime Minister to do.
Yeah, well, you say there's more at stake here than national security in what you describe as Morrison's hyper-partisan and grossly dishonest accusation.
Yeah, there is a lot more at stake because what's at stake in the end is the stability of the Australian democracy.
Yeah.
Now, we've got lots and lots of evidence from what's happened in America and Britain over the past 6 years since 2016. In 2016, of course, Trump was elected and the Brexit referendum was held in England, and both of those were examples of how hyper-partisanship can be such a powerful dynamo of instability in democracies, because they involve extreme division. They involve, first of all, finding points of division in society and then exaggerating them. So in both cases, really, race played a part. There was the xenophobia of Trump talking about building a great wall across the border of Mexico. There was all of the very nasty racist propaganda run by the Leave campaign in the United Kingdom, in the Brexit referendum, particularly by the UK Independent Party, UKIP, but of course signed on to by the Conservative Party of David Cameron. So this nasty racism and xenophobia were features of both of those campaigns, and they became real points of division in the country. So there's always racism, but it's The thing about this hyperpartisan politics is that it fixes onto these pre-existing hot-button topics, if you like, yep. and then applies the blowtorch to them, tries to make them even more divisive than they already are. So when this happens, you get widening divisions in society. And when democratic societies have become widely divided, the consensus on which democracy rests begins to weaken, because in our system, we accept, no matter what our politics are, we accept that the other side wins. That's the consensus. Yep. We consent that our vote, our method of electing governments, is a fair system, and that the results will be accepted by both sides. Now, when that consensus begins to fragment and weaken, then we get a situation that we saw in Washington on the 6th of January last year, where the election is said to have been stolen, and then a mob take to the streets, and in that case, of course, assailed the Houses of Parliament.
Well, there's evidence of that in some of these convoy to Canberra situations and some of the protesting that's going on, even in Perth here. You see thousands of people rocking up to protest against the government mandates. So there is that divisiveness right there in society.
Yes, and I think that's a good example of how these very big shifts in the way politics is conducted can have real-world, everyday consequences. We saw the same thing in Wellington, New Zealand, over vaccine mandates. People become energized and angry, and they begin to disbelieve that the government mandates have got legitimacy. And so instead of responding either by taking political campaigns or by the ballot box, they take to the streets. Mm. And we're seeing it in many parts of the world. It's all part of the same phenomenon. And it's corrosive of democracy.
It is. And you also say that bolstered or amplified by the Murdoch press, propaganda and spin and falsehoods promoted in the professional mass media, as well as social media, can contribute to these to the effect of this.
Yes. And, of course, we did see for many years in America how Murdoch's Fox News, which by far had the largest household penetration of any cable television service in America, how Murdoch's Fox News acted as Trump's preferred mouthpiece. It promoted the idea of the stolen election, the great lie of the stolen election. That, of course, in turn fueled the anger which resulted in that insurrection. Yeah. And it wasn't just over, of course, the great lie. All of the lies of Trump were unquestionably broadcast by the Murdoch media, not just on Fox, but in newspapers like the New York Post. So we had 4 years of Murdoch giving a megaphone to Donald Trump, amplifying his lies, and in that way contributing to what happened on the 6th of January. Now, same thing happened here. When Morrison made this shocking accusation against Albanese, the Murdoch Press, Sky News at Night, and The Australian, The Daily Telegraph, The Herald Sun in Melbourne, all of them picked up on Morrison's accusations and unquestioningly and uncritically amplified them, with the exception, one has to say, with the exception of two very big figures in the Murdoch organization, Andrew Bolt, and Greg Sheridan, the foreign editor of The Australian. These two men, quite remarkably, I think, stood out in a very outspoken way against what Morrison had done. Of course, they were careful not to criticize their own company, but they were very critical of what Morrison had done. So that was encouraging, but the rest of the Murdoch organization, of course, just for ideological reasons and without any regard for the consequences for the Australian democracy, amplified what Morrison had said. So
they were backing up. The argument there was over an article in the Global Times, which is described as a mouthpiece for the Chinese government.
Yes. And that's bananas in itself, because here we have Morrison claiming to, well, basically accusing the leader of the opposition and his deputy of being traitors, based upon an article in what is widely recognized as a Beijing propaganda outfit, a thing called the Global Times. So here is Morrison asking us to accept that he can believe what's in the Global Times, for the purposes of discrediting the opposition. So the proposition seems to be, I can use the propaganda of the Chinese government to accuse my opponents of being agents of the Chinese. Well, where does that logic get you? Into a big circle.
That's right. But the article, I've read the article, it doesn't really do that at all. It doesn't flatter Albanese so much, really. In fact, it does the opposite.
quite the reverse. It basically, so far from saying that Albanese is an agent of the
Manchurian candidate,
it says he's basically he's an unquestioning supporter of the United States.
Yeah, he's more of a US candidate, if there's such a thing as the opposite of a Manchurian candidate.
Yeah, he would be a Massachusetts candidate or something of the kind. Yeah. So the whole thing is not only intellectually disreputable, but it is really very dangerous stuff. And I must say, I was disappointed to see Albanese actually sling the Manchurian candidate slur back at Morrison. This was a chance for Albanese to actually show that he had the instincts of a statesman, and instead of getting down in the gutter with Morrison, saying, look, I will not engage in political debate of this kind because it's damaging to the national interest, and leave it at that.
He's like, no, you are. Kind of thing. It's a very childish kind of politics.
Yeah, well, it did, you know, and that was very disappointing.
Mm. What should the media do here? What's this sort of nonsense prevails in Parliament? How should the media portraying that?
Well, you have to report it because, of course, the Prime Minister is saying it.
Yep.
But it's not just the fact that you report it, it's how you report it. You report it and you report the repudiation of it by, for example, Mike Burgess, the head of ASIO, and the former head of ASIO, Dennis Richardson. Both of them came out within a few hours of this and said, stop this. This is damaging to the national interest. Now, if you report both what the Prime Minister says and you report the response to it, and you demonstrate in the words you choose that your own newspaper or broadcasting outfit regards this as dangerous, then you're doing your job. You have to report, but it's a question of the tone you strike.
Yes.
And reporting the criticism of it and giving priority to the criticism rather than priority to the accusation. That's the way to report this stuff.
Yeah, with the journalism of an unbiased report.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Yes. I mean, you have to give both sides of the story, but you prioritize the side of the story which you know is in the national interest, which is the side represented by Mike Burgess and Dennis Richardson, rather than trumpeting the accusation and then putting the rebuke from Burgess at the bottom of the story or in the next day's story. You make sure that when you report it, as you report it, you report both sides. Yeah. That's the way to do it.
That's how you're doing it. So we've still got another 3 months before the election, supposedly, which hasn't been announced anyway. So the responsibility of the media is going to get more intense, you're right. But you also say, who knows what their new conspiracy theories and hobgoblins the politicians will drum up between now and then. So what are some of these hobgoblins that you... Do you have any idea?
Well, no, it's difficult to know, but I mean, it's perfectly possible that the government will find some other scare campaign. Yeah. I mean, that is what they've been running on climate change. That's what they've been running on economic policy. They've been running it on this business of national security. So it's impossible for me. I don't have enough imagination to think up what these new conspiracy theories might be. But because you only have to look at the government's record on this, you know that the fear campaigns are an important part of their political strategy. And so it's not unreasonable to suppose that they will try to think up some further scare campaign. But I'm afraid, Alan, I really haven't got enough wit to understand what that might be.